This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Earlier today, Syria's foreign ministry declared that Syrian troops in Lebanon will withdraw to the eastern end of the Bekaa Valley, which is right next to the Syrian border. The ministry statement put the move in the context of a 1989 agreement, but it comes amid unprecedented pressure on Damascus. Many blame Syria for the car bomb that killed former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri and 16 others in Beirut last week. Anti-Syrian demonstrations erupted in Beirut afterwards and in Europe this week. President Bush and French President Jacques Chirac demanded the complete withdrawal of all Syrian forces, including Syrian intelligence agencies. Originally, Syrian forces intervened in Lebanon by invitation. They played a critical role in ending the long and bloody civil war. The price was Syrian domination of its small neighbor. Now opposition groups in Lebanon say they have overstayed their welcome and demand the resignation of the pro-Syrian government. Later in the program, Presidents Bush and Putin debate democracy and a free press in Slovakia, and one of the more unusual exhibitions of African-American history, Blacks in Wax. But first, the U.S., Lebanon, and Syria. If you have questions about what's happened and why, or how Iraq, Iran, and Israel play into this equation, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Jamil Marua, editor-in-chief of the Lebanese newspaper The Daily Star. He's with us by phone from his home in Beirut. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
So what is the scene like in Beirut today? Are there still thousands of people in the streets?
There are thousands of people, but they are not demonstrating. They are basically paying homage to the late Prime Minister Hariri. He has become the martyr of Lebanon. Those people are from all confessions, all walks of life, and all regions of Lebanon. There is a kind of a rebirth in this pain of the bomb that exploded and killed our ex-prime minister that had created collateral damage of all the Lebanese people. All of Lebanon feels that they were targeted. And they are expressing through their sorrow and through their homage to the late prime minister a kind of affirmation that they are Lebanese. They are voting with their sorrow. And we see this across the nation.
On Monday, the opposition has proposed a general strike.
We had on last Monday for the seventh day of the late Prime Minister's assassination, a strike and a huge march. The opposition were supporting for next Monday a call by the Chamber of Commerce and all the associations of trade associations in Lebanon for that called for a strike for next Monday, and the opposition supported that. Yes, we're calling for a strike to maintain the pressure on our government, who has showed a lot of ineptness and a lot of ineptness by forfeit in handling their duties and handling their responsibilities concerning the consequences of the assassination of Prime Minister Hariri.
What's been the response to the announcement in Damascus today that there would be a withdrawal to the eastern Bekaa Valley?
It is mixed. There isn't a lot of happiness, although this is a demand that has been on the table for years. And one does not want to feel Damascus leave Lebanon with its tail between its legs. That is not healthy for us. These are our neighbors. These are our really, really close neighbors. But there is an ominous paragraph or section of the statement that was made by the Deputy Foreign Minister, the Foreign Minister, in which he indicates that the kinds of opposition, the kinds of affirmation of Lebanese nationhood is seen by Damascus as negative. And therefore, he indicates that if those things go beyond a certain limit, which limit he does not state, the Lebanese always fall victim to the conflict between Syria and international powers. And the Lebanese will pay that for this with their livelihood and their economic stability and their security. That is not enough, that is not very diplomatic. That is something that the Syrians need to come to grips with. The mistakes over the years that have happened that caused the Lebanese to think that the Syrians have killed and plotted to kill and killed the Prime Minister Hariri do not come from any evidence or circumstantial evidence concerning this. They come from a visceral attitude that the Syrians do not disregard the Syrian state and the Syrian apparatus in Lebanon have not regarded the best interest of the Lebanese. They have conducted business in a manner that is very arbitrary, very arbitrary and very secretive. And this is why the security agencies were brought up by President Bush in his statement in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
We feel basically a general feeling in the country, a general sentiment in the country that is anti-Syrian. It is not healthy for us and the Syrians, but we must say to the Syrians, frankly, that we are not opposed to them. We cannot be opposed to them. They are our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to say to them, enough is enough of the way that you have been managing our country. Enough is enough. And their country, too. They've got to change their ways. They've got to reform, too. It is important for them to reform. Their president's agenda has been for 5 years, reform, reform, reform. It hasn't happened. And they have not allowed us. Their security apparatus has not allowed us here in Lebanon to reform. That is not healthy for both countries.
Jamil Marua is editor-in-chief of Beirut's Daily Star. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. Email totn@npr.org. And let's take a question from Kathy, who's calling from Athens, Ohio.
Yeah, hi. I recently saw the Syrian ambassador on C-SPAN, and he repeated over and over and over again that if the Lebanese government asked Syrian soldiers to leave, that they would leave. So I'm wondering, is the Lebanese government actually, along with the Bush administration, asking the Syrian soldiers to leave? And I have one other question is, I've been reading a lot about the IAEA non-proliferation treaty, and I understand that Iraq and Iran had signed, and Israel has never signed.
Mm-hmm.
Is Syria part of the NPT treaty also?
Jamil Marua, I believe Syria is a signer of the non-proliferation treaty.
It is, yes. Syria is a signatory to the treaty.
Let's go on to the other question, then.
To the question that the Syrian ambassador indicated that a decision by the Lebanese government would get the Syrian troops out. Let me put it this way. This is a catch-22 that turns into a noose around our neck, the Syrian neck and the Lebanese neck. They conduct gerrymandering of our elections in 2000. They influence parties to choose a parliament out of which, because we are a parliamentary system, out of which a government is chosen that whose power is based on the numbers of deputies or members of parliaments, members of Lebanese Congress, who gave them their vote of confidence. Those numbers in Congress are Syrian-based, Syrian-supported, and Syrian-orientated.
Are you saying it's a puppet government?
I am saying it is a very heavily doctored government. I am saying that it is not healthy for the Syrians to have this cycle that does not bring in clean blood, new fresh air, fresh politics into our system. And when the Syrian ambassador, with all due respect, is a very intelligent man and a very respectable man and a good friend of mine, or a good acquaintance of mine is more accurately. But the manner with which they have managed the political process in Lebanon ends up producing a government that will never take a decision like this, even if that decision is required for the interests of Syria. Why? Because the interests of Syria are decided in Damascus, and the machinations that control our system are set in the security agencies that are lodged in Lebanon. Now, let me quickly also add that all this cycle, the cycle that I had referred to as Catch-22, ironically had been beneficial for us and the Syrians for 15 years since the end of the civil war. But then it acquired and accumulated a lot of small mistakes that ended up turning this Catch-22 situation into a noose around our neck. And this is the situation that caused the Lebanese people to look at Syria, accusing it of the plot and the assassination of Prime Minister Hariri.
Kathy,
it is the fact that it is not open, it is done in subversively.
Kathy, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
We just have a minute or so left with you. I did want to ask before we let you go that up until relatively recently, Prime Minister Hariri, the late Prime Minister, and Walid Jumblatt, the Patriarch of the Jews Muslim community, both were accommodating Syrian presence in Lebanon. Things have changed.
Well, they had been the sentinels of Syrian presence for 15 years. Prime Minister Hariri fought with nail and tooth, as you would say, in order to institute the Taif Agreement, which was set in our political system in 1989-1990. But it is the deviations. The Taif Agreement stipulated that 2 years after the vote of the agreement as law, that the Syrian troops would withdraw to those areas that they now, today, called for withdrawing to. They were allies. The tides turned not because there was something conspiratorial here. There is a need in the Middle East because of population pressure, because of need of investment, because of need of more efficiency, and because our governments need to be more responsive to those changing needs. There is need for reform.
Jamil Marua, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
He is editor-in-chief of the Daily Star in Beirut, joined us from his home there. More on Syria, the U.S., and Lebanon after a break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about Syria, Lebanon, and the United States. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Earlier, Jamil Marua told us from Beirut that the assassination of Rafiq Hariri had united all Lebanese factions. There is one important faction that is not included in that, and that is Hezbollah. Joining us now is Daniel Byman, an assistant professor in the Security Studies program at Georgetown University School of Foreign Service, also a senior fellow at the Sabin Institute for Middle East Policy with the Brookings Institution. He's with us by phone from his home in Maryland. Good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about Hezbollah's reaction to these events in Lebanon.
Hezbollah has been very cautious. It's trying to balance a relationship that it has with Syria, which has acted in a way as a patron, allowing the organization to operate against Israel and giving it some freedom in Lebanon, with its genuine desire to be in sympathy with the Lebanese people, which is at the moment very anti-Syrian. So it's really tried to kind of dodge this issue for now.
And Hezbollah, you have to remember, is both a terrorist organization, as described by the United States government and many others, also an important political party in Lebanon.
Absolutely. Hezbollah has 12 seats in the parliament. It has a wide social network. Yet at the same time, it trains Palestinians to kill themselves against Israeli targets. We tend to think of terrorist and political organizations as quite different, but in many countries, they can be one and the same.
You mentioned Hezbollah's relationship with Syria. It also has a very important relationship with Iran.
Iran is the one that traditionally inspired Hezbollah, provides much of its arms, and it has a closer affinity to Iran. But Iran is far away from Lebanon, and since Syria is the country that is the true power in Lebanon, Hezbollah has had to come to an accommodation with Syria, even though its heart might be closer to Tehran.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is Jack, who joins us from Marin County in California.
I would like to ask a question about the future of Hezbollah if Syria was to completely withdraw from politics and completely withdraw its military from Lebanon. How would that be kind of a disaster for Hezbollah, since they're kind of protected, like you just said earlier, under Syrian occupation, sort of?
So what would happen to Hezbollah if Syria does withdraw? Daniel Byman?
Well, Syria has acted as a limit on Hezbollah, but also as an enabling force. Hezbollah would probably be the most capable military force in Lebanon. And as a result, if Syria withdrew, there would be less of a break on its activities. But things would not dramatically change for the militia unless someone tried to challenge its activities in southern Lebanon.
Well, wouldn't part of Lebanese sovereignty be the movement of Lebanese army troops to the border with Israel?
In theory, yes, but Hezbollah's activities against Israel are to a degree popular, and the Lebanese army, while real on paper, in practice would probably not be able to control the part of Lebanon that Hezbollah does. So you could talk about this as a theoretical option, but in reality, the new government would not be able to take on Hezbollah.
And does Hezbollah need the Syrian presence to establish its training camps in the Bekaa Valley, places like that, or would it be able to do so on its own?
Hezbollah would be able to do so on its own without Syria. Indeed, you know, its camps don't depend on Syria per se. But what happened to Lebanon in the past could happen again, which is as these training camps flourish, Israel or other countries that are affected might feel compelled to take direct action against them. And this could provoke a very nasty spiral in Lebanon itself as violence heats up. But in the short term, the difference would probably not be so great.
But as for the moment, Hezbollah has not yet aligned itself with the opposition or with the government?
No, Hezbollah has really tried to avoid taking sides at the moment, recognizing that it could lose either way, that it doesn't want to offend Lebanese opinion, but Syria is the power it has to deal with, and it does not want to anger Damascus.
Jack, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Daniel Byman, appreciate your time today.
My pleasure.
Daniel Byman, an assistant professor in the Security Studies program at Georgetown University's School of Foreign Service, and he joined us by phone from his home in Maryland. And with us now, a former ambassador to Syria and to Saudi Arabia, Richard Murphy, also Assistant Secretary of State for the Near East and South Asian Affairs under President Reagan. He's with us by phone from his home in New York City. Ambassador Murphy, always good to have you on Talk.
Thank you so much.
How significant do you think are the statements that Syria made today?
Not very, because keep in mind the Bekaa is a very narrow piece of land to start with, and you talk of withdrawing to the eastern edge. A mile or two different from where they might be today? And they've basically been in the Bekaa for the last several years. They did withdraw from their very public, prominent positions along the main road from Beirut to Damascus.
And at one point there were something like 40,000 Syrian troops in Lebanon. That number is now, what, about 13,000?
13, 14 is the figure that's commonly used, yeah.
Remind us, what was the mechanism that got Syrian forces into Lebanon in the first place?
Initially, it was the request of the Lebanese president when the fighting was going on between the Palestine Liberation Organization militias and Christian militias in Lebanon back in 1976. One of the more prominent Christian militias was losing, and the Christian president of Lebanon appealed for support, which then-President Hafez al-Assad gave very cautiously, coordinating it in a way through Washington so that Israel didn't suspect he was trying to pull a backdoor advance on Israel.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we heard earlier, the 1989 Taif Accord called for Syria to withdraw to the eastern Bekaa Valley in a couple of years. How has Syria justified its presence elsewhere for all this time?
It hasn't really justified it. It's relied on the statement that, hey, we'll withdraw when the government of Lebanon asks us to withdraw, and it's never seen fit to have the Lebanese government ask it.
And it's exactly that close?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let's get some callers on the line. Again, our number is 800-989-8255. Email is totn@npr.org. Anthony is with us. Anthony's calling from San Diego.
Yes, hi. I'm just wondering, a repeat situation from the 1982 assassination of Bashir Gemayel, when Mr. Gemayel has clearly stated that he wanted an overture with Israel and eventually some peace treaty with Israel. Why is it this time that Mr. Hariri, when he joined the opposition and clearly stated that Lebanon eventually will state peace treaty with Israel going forward was assassinated. It is obviously, to me and to a lot of Lebanese in this world, that the Syrian apparatus is definitely going forward with assassinating important people who are seeking peace with their neighbors.
Would you agree with that, Ambassador Murphy?
I can't agree with it on the basis of the facts that we yet know. Who ordered the assassination, who carried it out, still remains to be seen. I hope that the investigation will produce the guilty parties. I'm not optimistic because investigations in Lebanon never have gotten very far.
A UN investigation team arrived in Beirut today.
Right. And I just hope that the site of the blast has been so guarded that the evidence remains untouched for them to do the actual forensic checks. Now, the fact is there are various possible motives for having the assassination of Hariri. It does seem to be an inside job in the sense that it appears it took place on a freshly repaved section of the road, that it was buried, a major charge buried under the road and then remotely set off. Somebody knew who they wanted to get, when they wanted to get him. And that seems to lead you to say, well, some part at least of Lebanese intelligence and possibly Syrian intelligence were involved. And then you go further. Well, what's the motivation? 20 years of presence have been, frankly, corrupting ones for the Syrian forces and the Syrian presence in Lebanon, and a lot of money's been made by that presence, and there could well be elements who saw Hariri's move to mobilize the opposition to the Syrian presence as the death knell of their economic benefits.
Let's flip that on the other way, though, and a lot of people are saying, look, seeing what's happened, this assassination did unite the opposition in Lebanon in an unprecedented way. This is the last thing that Syria would want.
Personally, I find it very hard to believe that the top level of the Syrian government ordered this assassination for the reason that they are under such an intense microscopic examination today on the part of Washington, on the part of Paris, watching their every move. I find it just wasn't in their interest to do this, but we really don't know yet.
Anthony, thanks for the call. Let's go now to Bern. Bern is calling from Half Moon Bay in California.
Yes, hi, thank you. If I could just build upon what the ambassador just said about the economic issues. I was in the Middle East in various places last fall, and while in Lebanon, in addition to people on just people on the street on both sides of the issue of whether Syria should stay or whether they should go, there were also several people who told me that one of the reasons that the Syrians are still there is an economic one, in that the Syrian army is acting as something of an extortion ring, essentially strong-arming Lebanese businessmen to hire Syrians to work on various jobs and restaurants and construction projects and the like, and that the motivations for this are, number one, apparently someone within Syria is paying the military officers, the Syrian military, a lot of money to do this, and secondly, that there's a very high unemployment rate in Syria, and this is something of a safety valve for the potential of real problems within Syria because of.
Well, you know, it's even maybe a little more complicated than that. That's the beauty of things, Lebanese. No one answer is out there. The Lebanese employer of those Syrian workers is apparently exempted or doesn't report them for tax purposes to the government of Lebanon. So it's to their benefit to have Syrian workers, and Syrian workers are there in the hundreds of thousands doing jobs which many Lebanese just don't want to do.
Bern, thank you.
Thank you.
Let me try to put this in a wider regional context. We talked to some degree about Israel. Last couple of days, a U.S.-supported television station in Iraq has been playing footage of a man who identifies himself as a Syrian intelligence operative, saying he's been active organizing terror groups in Iraq. This is another side to all of this. And in the past few days, Waleed Jumblatt has said that the Iraqi elections have also played an important part in the stirrings for the opposition in Lebanon.
Well, I'm glad you bring in Iraq, Neil, because it's certainly a major factor in the current tensions between Washington and Damascus. We've always had a certain level of frustration in our Syrian dealings. It's mutual frustration. They don't understand a lot of the times how we develop our policies. But when the Syrians were found to be not just operating a major import of oil outside of the UN-approved channel before the war from Iraq, and were smuggling arms into Iraq in exchange for part of that trade, and then talking up the need for recruits to go in as mujahideen to fight the occupying forces, that Washington really boiled over. And they have put great pressure, I believe, on Damascus to tighten up border controls, and to some degree that's happened. I gather from reading comments by some of our military in Iraq, border controls are better than they were, but they're still not totally effective. I don't know if they could ever be totally effective. It's a long, open desert. But there's these various points of both, you know, regular, longstanding frustration and real anger in the relationship at this point in time.
We're speaking with former ambassador to Syria and Richard Murphy. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. And this is Ida. Ida's calling from Phoenix.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because my parents, after living in the U.S. for 40 years, have decided to retire in Lebanon. They recently bought an apartment there. And I'm worried about them and wondering, you know, the opposition has been pretty peaceful. Is this going to turn into something dangerous for them?
I don't think necessarily so. There's not a great appetite. There's not any real appetite for a return to the awful conditions of the Civil War. And I think it's encouraging that we saw, after the assassination, a coming together, very public coming together, of Sunni, Maronite, Orthodox, Druze, who throughout the Civil War each operated their own militias and were merciless towards each other. It was an extraordinarily bloody period for 14 long years. I don't see any appetite for that. It's not to say that this major tragedy, which did cost Lebanon the image of a leadership and the reality of a leadership that was well known in the West and was able to encourage investment from major countries in his country, that's a loss for the country, but I'm not sure it's going to produce a collapse back into the abyss of civil war.
Great. I'm optimistic about that then.
All right. Wish your parents the best of luck, Ida.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And one other thing I wanted to ask you about, Ambassador Murphy, and that is in the past few days, Syria and Iran announced an alliance of sorts because of, anti-American alliance.
Well, that's existed in one form or another for the last several years. They supported Iran in the war between Iran and Iraq in the 80s. Then they supported the Iraqis after the Ba'ath Party was overthrown by our invasion in 2003. But there's been a longstanding tie with Iran. This was built in, I found, a rather peculiar fashion as a Iranian way of passing instructions how to cope with any new sanctions that America might impose. Then that statement made during the visit of the Syrian prime minister, I believe, to Tehran was followed by one from Damascus saying, well, it really was no new agreement. They're a little nervous. I think they're very nervous at this point in time. So it's on with Iran and then keep a distance from Iran. It's a tough moment for the Syrian decision makers.
Do you expect to see this before the UN Security Council before long?
I would expect, let's see what this UN investigation produces. It's been to the Security Council last fall. Resolution 1559 called for all foreign forces to get out. That referred to the Syrian forces and to the Iranian Revolutionary Guard elements that are in southern Lebanon.
And today, Kofi Annan, the UN Secretary General, called for the withdrawal of all Syrian forces, complete withdrawal, by April. So we'll have to see what happens with that.
The pressures are mounting, yeah.
Ambassador Murphy, thank you as always.
Thank you.
Richard Murphy joined us by phone from his home in New York City, former ambassador to Syria and to Saudi Arabia and an assistant secretary of state for Near East and South Asian affairs under President Reagan. When we come back from a short break, we'll give you an update on what happened today in Slovakia when Presidents Bush and Putin met. Among other things, they debated the free press. More after the break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.